Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
You fucked Duffy's wife.
No, I didn't fuck her. We just messed around a little bit.
Messed around with another, you know, where we come from, that's a death sentence, you know that? I myself would kill anybody who did that.
I understand that.
Make sure you get this into Lewis's hands. You hear? All right? You know, when you give a piece to somebody, you start to then find out who your real friends are.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 379 of the Really Awful Movies Podcast. Gutshot Straight. Now, this is part of what is admittedly a bit of a tough slog, and that is going through the entire filmography of Steven Seagal. Although, it should be said that in 2014's Gutshot Straight, old Stevie here, who's at his peak, you could say, widow's peak, that is, he's actually the heavy in this movie. And you'd think, okay, that's different, but also it's something he should be accustomed to as he's gained so much weight. But anyway, he plays a character named, of all things, Polly Trunks. I don't know, because he can't fit into them. No, there is a backstory to that. And to be fair to Steven, because we always are on the Really Awful Movies Podcast, but less is more when it comes to Seagal. He, especially of late, as he's put on the poundage and his girth and his inability to move beyond a few steps has really hampered any production he's been in, especially since, Submerged would be arguably his last legitimate movie, but anyway, here he's used sparingly and to some decent effect as a seedy Vegas loan shark, again named Polly, and he trots out his Gino Fellino Marked for Death style awful Brooklyn accent in this one too. So the man is, I mean, Lon Chaney was the man of a thousand faces, Seagal is the man of a thousand voices, each one of them a Cajun accent, or New York. Tough guy-ese. This is a pretty bad movie, but it's not about Seagal. This is a vehicle for George Eads, and you may know him from MacGyver and from CSI, and that very square-jawed fellow. And here he really looks like a low-rent Rocky Balboa. They even mention it. I think one of the characters actually mentions that, given that he's rocking a pork pie hat. But in my estimation, he looks a lot like a combination of maybe Kid Rock and Rocky, that's for sure. So he's combining the rocks. As an aside, like Kid Rock, his music has just gotten so much worse in recent years. I almost had a grudging respect for him just because he had a decent touring band, and when he fuses kind of white trash country with rock, it was something that was sort of unique, albeit kind of craptacular. But now it's just almost just this rap metal is so over the top cringy, but that goes without saying in a way. But this movie, Gutshot Straight, and I'm not much of a poker player, but this is a variation of a straight that requires a certain card to come through, and you know it's a bad movie, and a bad action movie at that, when the title of the movie is actually mentioned within the first 5 to 10 minutes, and of course it is here. And given that it's a poker movie, you have a guy named Jack. Ooh, go figure, right? Jack. At least there's no ace. But is this movie aces? We'll see. I mean, it is set in Vegas, so that is something. And it does feature Vince Neil of Motley Crue's strip club, with which he's affiliated, I believe. I don't know if he owns the place. It's called Deja Vu. I don't know if it's still in operation. I haven't actually done that much research. It was just an impromptu afternoon, rainy day watch. And I figured, you know, Seagal would be more in this one than he was, but turns out he isn't. So I'm making a few adjustments accordingly. But anyway, Vegas... You know, you can't go wrong lensing a film there, and it does provide a kind of a nice seedy backdrop, both the strip and off the strip, for this film. And to give credit where it's due, I mean, this is a no-budget DTV production, right? As Seagal has increasingly made between 2007 and present day. And the director doesn't even have a Wikipedia entry. It's Justin Steele, which sounds like a pseudonym, an Alan Smithy type production, but I'm not familiar with any of his work. And when I saw, you know, IMDb being a 3 rating, I thought, you there but by the grace of God go I. But yeah, truth be told, it's not the world's worst thing. I've seen far worse. It's actually decently lensed, and admittedly, it does offer all the trappings of a seedy, inveterate, degenerate gambler type movie, and it has even mentions of, well, Kenny Rogers the Gambler. And if you're not familiar with that song, my God, it has to be the cliche of cliches for betting and gambling and poker type songs. I mean, really, the not exactly approaching the summit of creativity there by using that one, but what are you going to do? The story takes a while to get going, but involves a gambler named Jack who's down on his luck, down on the skids, and who gets the holy tar beaten out of him by Vinnie Jones. So it's always good to see Vinnie Jones in anything, whether it's his turn in some of the British productions or Midnight Meat Train. He's always, his scowling presence is always welcome. And here he's used to limited but effective use as well. And so you got this gambler here, Jack, and he is in debt and desperately seeking to excavate himself from the situation. He crosses paths with one Duffy. And Duffy is one of these movers and shakers on the strip. And it's funny how they encounter one another. It's at a strip club, and there's this protracted scenes where I guess some fixer sets him up with him, saying he's your conduit to make money in this town. The two of them meet, and Jack actually does a reading of Duffy, and it's quite good. I mean, he pegs him for being thrice or four times married, and says he actually looks his age, which is an indicator. Who knew this was an indicator? But looking your age is somehow an indicator of wealth. I guess if you're trying to hide it, you have other things to hide. I don't know. I couldn't quite get the rationale for that, but the two of them end up hitting it off, and Jack, he tests Jack by laying down a few bets worth several thousand dollars each. Like, he tries to get him to open a beer bottle using nothing but, folded up bunch of dollar bills. I forget the denomination, but it seemed like a pretty tough task to me anyway. Then he gets him to break a beer bottle with one hand, using just a hand, obviously not smashing it over the strip club stage or stepping on it or anything, but it was some task, I forget which. And then increasingly, he's playing with him and playing these silly games of increasing importance on the fiduciary scale. And he goes back to his mansion, and that's where they meet this temptress type figure. And this is Annalyn McCord, she of Beverly Hills 90210, the reboot, and also kind of a quasi-mediocre horror movie Excision. She's in tons of different things, and she was the villainess in the reboot of 90210, and she's super sexy, and you think that in kind of a film noir style, she's actually going to be some sort of honeypot trap. And that's where things take us, where it turns out this old Duffy guy is a bit of a pervert, and he is willing to pay Jack $20,000 to fuck his wife in front of him. So it seems like pretty easy payday. It doesn't seem too hard to me, pardon the pun, but $20,000 for what? 30 seconds of work? Rim shot there. The drummer was slow off the draw with that one, but He doesn't take kindly to this offer, and he tries to storm out, and they get involved in the scuffle, and spoiler alert for 2014 piece of shit DTV movie with a budget of nothing, but this seedy middle-aged guy ends up stone dead on the floor, and it turns out that the guy is connected with some kind of seedy figures. Geez, in Las Vegas? You're kidding me, right? Anyway, his brother is a shady character as well, and the brother has, I guess, video evidence of Jack actually being at the home, and he was the last person to see his brother alive, and he's able to lord this over him, and you have this cat and mouse dynamic about who actually killed Duffy and whether it was, as the brother suspects, actually his presumably long-suffering young wife. It looks like there's about a 20 to 30 year age gap between them, or whether it was this drunken, degenerate gambler interloper who killed him. But this is where the movie takes us. And we're going to segue now into what we learned. It's going to be kind of a short podcast here on a rainy day here. But my God, earlier on, I was actually watching Hard to Kill. And I was just reminded that when his excesses are held in check, and back when he was a lean, svelte, killing machine, and you could take that to the bank, man, was Steven Seagal awesome. And for a period of about three or four movies, he was just absolutely killing it. Even with cheesy stuff that was shaking the foundation a bit with, you know, maybe an executive decision or The Patriot or something, like the cracks in the foundation weren't as readily apparent as his toupee is today, but yeah, some of the latter movies, I mean, oh my God, they're just absolutely beyond explanation or redemption. The General Commander springs to mind. There was a Sniper Special Forces Ops one. There's Attack Force. I believe that's the one where they actually redubbed his voice. These are increasingly just terrible efforts, and I mean, he seems like a terrible guy too. His support for Vladimir Putin notwithstanding, and all the Me Too allegations and whatnot, but as creepy as a guy as he seems, I did encounter some redemption for him, at least on one front, and that was regarding an alleged incident that took place between him and pro wrestler slash Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu pioneer, Jean LaBelle. And there's been some, I guess, back and forth between them, I think, or people speaking as advocates on Seagal's behalf as to what really happened. And some stuntmen, I believe, have come forward to support Seagal's account of the fact that he was just thrown down by LaBelle rather than LaBelle's account, which I would love to believe. This is actually what Joe Rogan repeated on his podcast too. I would absolutely love to believe this, but that Jean LaBelle choked out Seagal and made him shit his pants after some squabble they had. But who knows? We'll probably never know, but I'm inclined to believe what the stuntman said, and it was just more of a shoving match, and LaBelle just threw him down, and then they had to be separated. But damn, that would be so good if that were true. And I wish I could remember the guy's videos. It was something to do with some martial arts YouTuber who was detailing some of Seagal's bona fides as a martial artist. And there's another pretty good video about, I think it's called I Spent 24 Hours with Steven Seagal. It came out last month, and it's pretty entertaining. I mean, God knows the man needs his image buffed up a little bit, that's for sure. The guy is mostly, predominantly, thoroughly unlikable. And this movie really isn't. And surprisingly so. I mean, I'm probably going to give it a begrudging like 2.5 out of 5. It's a decent time filler, and albeit with a few really cheesy lines so that you almost can't begrudge it. Like, you just signed your death warrant there, pal, or something to that effect. You gotta love that one, signing your death warrant. And there is a little bit of kind of a neat film noir feel to this one. It is cheap. It is cheap and cheerful. It does make use of its very limited budget. And I expected far, far worse. And when we're talking some of the latter day efforts by Segal, where he just is not even phoning it in, but maybe shouting it in, you got to take that into account. I mean, Driven to Kill, all these just awful, awful efforts of late, featuring the same, seemingly same poster art with like 45 degree angle color block down the middle and someone pointing a gun at a 45 degree angle to one corner of it, just always the same kind of thing. And no, this movie is not in the upper pantheon of all-time great gambling slash Vegas debauchery movies. And I'm going to throw in, I'm kind of a fan of Croupier. That's a pretty decent one, and I really like, obviously, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Molly's Game was actually really good as well, when you want to talk about the seedy underbelly of gambling and all that. I thought that was pretty decent. I mean, and I saw that actually right after Gerald's Game, and I thought, oh, what are the odds I'd catch two films that are very, very similarly titled? But so this one, yes, it's no great shakes. Another thing I learned is that one of the goon henchmen is actually played by, he has a very, very bit part, and all he's really doing is working out in the octagon. But you see a small glimpse of Frank Mir, the UFC fighter, playing, well, Frank. And it's pretty well known that Vegas is home base for a lot of UFC fighters. It's where Dana White holds a lot of cards, and tons of fighters live there and train there, and there's a bunch of big MMA gyms down there. And Frank Mir, for those who don't know, was instrumental in humiliating Brock Lesnar when they first had a tilt, and he put him in a toe hold and just submitted the big man, and it was pretty fantastic. And I was really pulling for him as I mean, speaking of unlikable characters, I mean, my God, Brock Lesnar, who I think he might live up in Canada now. He hunts up here all the time, but I think he lives in Manitoba, if I'm not mistaken, on some multi-hundred-acre farm or something. But you know, a real jackass and responsible for one of the more appalling moments I think I've ever seen on UFC, where he talked about how he would get on top of his wife, and he's just such a vulgarian and such a brute and such an a-hole. And well, and similar things have been charges have been levied against Segal, but it was so gratifying to see Frank Mir, a bona fide Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt and seemingly kind of a chill, kind of cool guy, just to tap out Lesnar. That was so awesome. But anyway, he's in this movie. Gina Dourif is in this movie. So you got your Brad Dourif, obviously a B-movie stalwart. So, sorry, not Gina, it's Fiona Dourif. She was on Shameless on Showtime, and she's got to be, like, I'm guessing, yeah, she's the daughter of Brad Dourif. I mean, if you're like a bad movie fan, you'll know him for tons of his later roles. Obviously, he put himself on the map with his award-winning, I think, or nominated Billy Bibbit, obviously, in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and whatnot. But, man, that guy has done, like, tons of bad movies and tons of good movies, too. I mean, you can't go wrong with him in like, Blue Velvet, obviously. And obviously, for horror heads, you're going to look to him for Child's Play. But Mississippi Burning, really awesome. But as the years went on, I mean, my God, he was just appearing in everything under the sun. You know, stuff like Critters 4. I mean, who even knew there was a Critters 4? He was also in, like, little bit parts in Urban Legend, as I've mentioned before on the podcast, filmed at my alma mater, the University of Toronto. But this is not about Brad Dourif, but his daughter's in it. There's also a Carradine in this movie, and I can't remember which one. Obviously, not the dead one who met his maker in a most unseemly manner. But there's a bunch of people in this movie, and it's no great shakes. It's nothing fantastic. It's not a game changer by any sorts, but it's something. You know, it's short and sweet. It was distributed by Lionsgate, which is pretty surprising. But I guess at the time, 2014, putting Steven Seagal and Vinnie Jones on the marquee would have been enough to generate at least some semblance of business. So I forgot also Wayne's World fans. I mean, Tia Carrera, very briefly, she has a cup of coffee in this one as a stripper. You don't see her naked, FYI, but she just has this very, very brief interaction with the star, who just really, again, cuts a pretty dull figure as Jack, and he's as is par for the course. If you're a degenerate gambler, you have to have a pork pie hat for some reason, and he's not really the most charismatic guy in the world. And this movie is largely carried, I think, by Ted Levine as Lewis, who is Duffy's brother, and this also seedy character, and obviously from Silence of the Lambs as Buffalo Bill, but he's got a really raspy, gravelly voice, and he sort of sets the proceedings in motion, because he sort of, you don't know how much he knows about his brother's demise, and he sort of plays Jack for a bit of a fool at times, and he's just sort of kind of scrutinizing him, and that's kind of a not a bad role as far as these things go. So is this great by any means? Is this a world beater by any means? No, but I got a decent kick out of the Las Vegas lights, and oh, Elvis slept here, and just the seediness of the strip, and capturing some of that energy. And again, it's not Molly's Game, it's not Croupier, it's not, hell, it's not Ocean's 11 or any of these. It really barely gets into the top 20 Las Vegas gambling type movies, but it's a decent time waster. I always get a kick out of Anna Lynn McCord as well. She's sexy. She brings the goods. She's always the same in every role as kind of a temptress, but I mean, she's decent enough. This thing's decent enough. I mean, again, you're not going in expecting much, right? Gives Seagal top billing, but Seagal, really all he does is, he's basically an arms dealer to the protagonists, and all he is sort of an underworld figure who just has some tough guy, like Vinny dialogue, and just sits behind a poker felt table for the most part, and just looks glowering. And again, his hair is really wild. He's since fixed it to, I guess, decrease increase the angles of this widow peak, but it really came to a head, as it were, around this time. And it was just, I mean, the Brillo pad head he was rocking in around this era was really something to behold. But he's a pig, he's a bit of a goofball, but at least from what I can understand, the Jean LaBelle story is probably apocryphal, and that's pretty good for his reputation anyway, because LaBelle was a bit of a shit talker as well with his background in pro wrestling. You take what he says with a grain of salt as well. So, and take what I say with a grain of salt too. I mean, my God, I feel like we're just, you know, dutifully just trudging through the back catalog of Steven Seagal. And my God, this really does take a lot of effort and a lot of gumption and a lot of stick-to-itiveness, because some of these efforts, my God, have been really, really bad. And he's a prolific bastard too, just putting out product like there's no tomorrow. And ever since he decamped for Eastern Europe, I mean, these movies have been bad, but some of them have been globetrotting as well. And I don't know how he gets the financing for them or whether he does it himself, but these movies are really bad, and he just has basically resorted to sitting in them like Marlon Brando or something. And he's just not very mobile of late, but still, this one is something. You'll get some kicks out of it. And yeah, 2.5, 2. Anyway, if you're interested in movies that have a lot more action than this one, check out Mine's Bigger Than Yours, The 100 Wackiest Action Movies, which is Jeff and I's homage to the genre, spanning canon films from the 80s to present day. Pick that up and support the show, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.